You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. This election day marks the finish line of a grueling and long and bitter campaign. It began with Ted Cruz declaring his candidacy. That was in March 2015. Some 20 months later, many Americans are expressing their utter and complete exhaustion with this process. Singer Sheryl Crow channeled her frustration into a petition she's launched on change.org. It asks the Republican and Democratic National Committees to limit the length of the campaign season to reduce the amount of time we're all exposed to presidential campaigns. And we wondered, how did the process of electing our president become so protracted? Let's turn now to Matt Grossman, Associate Professor of Political Science at Michigan State University, where he directs the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. Matt, welcome back to Stateside.
Good to be with you.
I have heard people, especially in these last few weeks, ask this question a lot. When you look at other countries, Canada, the UK, France, Ireland, where they can elect their leaders in 4 to 6 weeks and then move on, how come we take so long?
Well, the main trade-off is that we decided that the voters should have a role in the primary process rather than leaving it to the political parties. And since we have had a greater role since after the 1968 elections, campaigns keep getting longer. So we could have left it up to the political parties at the conventions, and then we would have a much shorter campaign. But we decided the voters should have a say, and that lengthens it.
What triggered that change in 68?
Well, in the 1968 election, Humphrey, who hadn't really ran in a single presidential primary, was nominated by the Democratic Party for president in a scene of protests outside and inside the convention hall. And it led people to ask whether we could have a broader primary process where the voters could be brought in rather than the party bosses.
So politically, what are the costs and what are the gains of having such a long season?
Well, the gain is people do learn a lot of information. They wouldn't normally pay that much attention to politics, but campaigns put it right in front of them, especially presidential campaigns. So they learn more about the differences between the political parties, the issues that confront the country, even potential policy solutions over the course of a long campaign. The downside is we get annoyed with it and frustrated with it, and we tend to learn things we don't like about the candidates more than things we do like about them.
Well, I have to wonder just the sheer length of it. Let's talk about the debates. Starting August 6, 2015 with the first GOP primary debate and ending this past October 19th with the third presidential debate. At my count, we've had 26 candidate debates and town halls. Is all of that really essential to the process? I mean, are people paying attention to all of that?
Well, a whole lot more people pay attention to the general election presidential debates than the primary process, and certainly not very many people went through all those 26 gatherings. But the parties did actually shorten the debate process somewhat this time. Believe it or not, the Republicans had fewer presidential primary debates, in part because the Republican National Committee took some control of the process. So there was an effort to limit the extended campaign this year, but it still seems long to us.
It does. So what do we know about when the average voter really starts drilling down and paying attention?
Well, most people make up their mind on a presidential election in terms of what party they're going to vote for quite early. You could even just poll them right now by which party they like better, and we could predict their 2020 and 2024 votes. So most people don't really need any information from the campaign to make a decision. But those people who don't pay a lot of attention to politics and don't have a strong partisanship often take a very long time to decide on their presidential preference, and some don't decide till the last few weeks of the campaign.
That's true, because you can easily find people telling the legions of reporters, no, I still have yet to decide. How much of all of this, I've got to wonder, the long campaign, and certainly there's lots of advertising, there's lots of TV time, how much of it is driven by the candidates and parties versus cable and broadcast networks and news organizations looking to grow their audiences?
Well, certainly we saw this year an active effort by CNN and some of the other cable channels to take advantage of Donald Trump, who was a well-known candidate in the public and a very different kind of candidate, and did see some big increases in their ratings over the last year as a result of that nonstop coverage of Donald Trump. There's also some media incentives to keep the advertising going, especially the Super PAC advertising, where they pay the full rates instead of the candidate advertising. So there is some media incentive to keep the campaign going. But as political scientists, we do like to say there is some benefit, some knowledge that voters gain from that advertising. And one of the trends that we've seen as campaigns have spent more is voters really do know more about the party differences now than they used to and are able to make a decision about which party best represents them.
Matt, let me ask you, as a political scientist, when you think of this campaign that we hear many people say, I've never seen anything like this, the poisonous atmosphere, the biliousness of it all, is that just a sense of we're tired of all of this? Have we had campaigns that are this fractious in our history that you could point to for context?
Well, we've certainly had very negative campaigns before. I think what is unique about this campaign is just the unpopularity of both major presidential candidates. We've never seen anything like someone as unpopular as Hillary Clinton, except that Donald Trump is much more unpopular than Hillary Clinton. So we definitely have candidates that are disliked. But I would say that doesn't mean that everybody dislikes both candidates. Mm-hmm. It's just that almost everybody who likes Hillary Clinton dislikes Donald Trump and vice versa, and about a quarter of the electorate really doesn't like either one.
So we saw a change in 68 after Humphrey, as you say, was nominated without having run in a primary. Could we see a similar push to shorten the campaign season and to tweak the calendar and have that be grassroots driven?
Well, the actual election season has varied over time, and it's basically driven by when the Iowa caucuses and New Hampshire primary are set. And that's varied, you know, up to a month. So we could certainly see that changing. There doesn't seem to be as much front-loading effort now that the parties have taken control, so states aren't trying to jump in place of Iowa and New Hampshire. And that's one thing that caused Iowa to go so early. But that's just the actual election season. We're still going to have, you know, 6 months to a year before Iowa votes, we'll still have the candidates out there campaigning.
Matt, how quickly do you think the next campaign is going to start?
Well, in some ways, it has already started. The vice presidential nomination process has some role in the future campaign. You can see potential 2020 candidates trying to figure out if they should be completely on board with Donald Trump, only somewhat on board or against, in order to set themselves up for the Republican nomination in 2020.
So we're already there. We're voting today, but we're already looking ahead to 2020.
Absolutely. And we often look quite far back to see people gaining. So it was Obama's 2004 convention speech that really moved him forward in the presidential nominating process much later when he hadn't even been a U.S. senator yet. So it can start quite early.
Matt Grossman directs the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University, and he's co-author of a textbook about American elections, campaigns, and elections. Matt, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.